And boom goes the dynamite. And boom goes the dynamite.
Good evening, and welcome to episode 4 of Boom Goes the Dynamite here at the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network, where we go over AEW Dynamite and AEW Dark. I'm Jeffrey. You know us from the Strong Style Story podcast. With me, my co-host, Chris Damasceno. Chris,
how are you? Hi, I'm Chris. How's it going? Good, good. Let's get to the show.
We're just getting right on it today. Let's start with AEW Dark episode 3 that dropped yesterday, featuring on commentary Excalibur and holy crap, it's Taz.
Cue the Botchamania intro.
Taz was not the greatest commentator in his day, but oh god, you know, I just remember.
I'll say this: him and Excalibur. I think it's just the Excalibur effect at this point, because he's made everybody that's been with him just look phenomenal in commentary, and Taz was no different for this entire episode. I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, Taz was not bad on commentary, even though, I mean, he's on the radio every day now, and, you know, he did a lot of commentary. I didn't like it, but boy, I just, you know, nostalgic for, you know, 95 to 99 Taz, you know?
Yeah, understandable. You live for that era, so it's like that was your heyday.
Oh boy! But let's get into Dark, and three matches on this show again. The first one, Joey Janela, mm-hmm. against our favorite D&D nerd, Brandon Cutler.
Indeed.
What'd you think of this?
Thought it was all right. Definitely a nicer showcase for Cutler than his match with MJF was, but it was a good way of establishing that Joey is a few tiers above him and to give him his first official victory in AEW as well, which was much needed at this point. If the win losses deal is going to be, you know, counting in the long term, Joey needs a couple of these just to sort of get himself back to the 500 spectrum, so this was a good start towards that.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I really think that they maybe could have made this more of a squash, though.
Maybe. I can see
I
them.
Don't know. I mean, let's face it. I mean, again, Joey Janela is many tiers above Brandon Cutler.
Yes, I definitely agree with that. But I do think that it's important to establish some of these lower tier guys like Cutler and such as viable threats in case you ever want to do somewhat of a crazy upset somewhere down the line with these, especially with the records counting the way that they do. So I do feel establishing that these guys are not just like pushovers and leaving like the full-on squashing to like local talent that randomly comes in every so often, like last week around.
Right. I mean, I can see that. I mean, I know that you know, Brandon Cutler is still, you know, drawing a regular AEW paycheck, but mm-hmm. you know, it just seems like, you know, if you're going to establish Janela as some sort of contender, maybe you ought to, like, you know, show that. And I mean, they kind of did that, but I think, you know, let's, again, Brandon Cutler is on a, you know, he's on like a very much lower tier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we got another video interview with Cody Rhodes and I scribbled this name. Is it QT Marshall?
I believe so.
Yeah,
yes.
I scribbled it. I can't read my own handwriting. QT Marshall, he's a wrestler, but he's also, you know, one of the road agents. You know, he's behind the scenes. And I guess he's gonna be on, you know, this forthcoming
Dark.
Episode of Dark.
Yes.
So
yes, indeed. So
we'll keep an eye out for him. I know nothing about him as a wrestler, so.
Neither do I, so I'm interested to kind of see how this plays out. And Dark should be a good place to do that with, so.
The next match was a women's match. It was Nyla Rose, the once and future contender for the AEW women's title, against Leva Bates. Chris, I owe you a huge apology, because
I knew you'd come around eventually.
This was... Let's just put it this way. The highlight of the match was the most unexpected name drop I think I would have ever heard, in which both Taz and Excalibur name dropped Garth Ennis and Derek Robertson, the creative team behind the comic book series The Boys, that of course has now been adapted on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, who would have thought that?
Yeah, no kidding. Again, good showcase for Nyla in regards of being dominating, having an official singles, like an official singles non-battle royal when under her belt now, which is really nice to finally see. But just Leva Bates is not someone
that was not a good match. No. that match was not good, and it was mm-hmm. not Nyla's fault at all.
No,
that was not a good match.
Not by any means. Anyways, moving on to the main event of AEW Dark.
Yeah, we have three executive vice presidents and the brother of an executive vice president going up against Private Party, Shima, and T-Hawk.
Who was finally signed. And
remember how... Do you remember the struggle of many years of Dragon Gate booking trying to make T-Hawk happen?
Yep.
And it just never really quite took, did it?
It's unfortunate because T-Hawk is indeed very, very good at the pro wrestling.
He
very
is good, but yeah, for some reason, in Dragon Gate, it just never happened.
Nope. But then again, a lot of things never happen in Dragon Gate. There's enough examples of that, misses more so than the hits at this point.
Well, I mean, when they finally chased off Shingo, I mean, that should have been... Yeah, maybe. I mean, I like Ben K and all, but you know,
yeah,
he's just fine.
Mm-hmm. But alas, back to this match in specific. Fun bit with just displaying everybody involved: Dustin, Cody and the Bucks doing Cody and Bucks things, Shima and T-Hawk getting to show a little bit of their own tandem teamwork as Strong Hearts, which was nice. And Private Party keeping themselves nice and ready for the eventual match that they would have this week around from a canon standpoint. So
I just want to say that my favorite part was the consecutive power slams, and then Isaiah Kennedy goes to go get his, and Cody was like, wait a minute, I'm an old man, I gotta catch my breath here. I thought that was actually really funny.
Dustin played it well. The antics near the end got to be a little bit much, but given that this is, you know, your dark match spots just being uploaded onto YouTube, I don't mind that they have a little bit of fun with the crowd and play off of that like they did with the Brandy and MJF bits.
It was what it was. And again, you know, you've seen one Young Bucks match, you've seen them all, as we'll talk about later. But, but again, Private Party looked really good. Shima and T-Hawk looked pretty good, although it was T-Hawk who took the fall in the end, falling to Dustin Rhodes.
Congrats on the new contract, kid. Take a pen. To the executive, to the brother of an executive vice president.
Yep.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Well, isn't that kind of how it works in Japan? You sign somewhere and you lose your first match? That's kind of how it works.
I guess.
I mean,
but on all fun episode of AEW Dark, I do like the idea of them bringing in guest commentators every so often and just letting Excalibur have fun with them. A petition to have Chuck Taylor on commentary with him at some point in one of these episodes, just so it feels like a PWG episode, basically.
Yeah, this episode of Dark was definitely greater than the sum of its parts, because I really didn't like any really... I mean, none of the matches really were particularly great, you know, but, I mean, overall, it was still, you know, it was an okay package. The librarian shtick, Jesus Christ. End this. Yeah, just end this now.
It is the dumbest thing in the company right now, which...
That's really
probably
is,
a good thing that we can really point that out as the only dumbest thing we've seen in a company as of right now. So far.
I mean, there's still plenty of time.
Mm-hmm.
But now we move on to the other side of the state of Pennsylvania. We're in Western Pennsylvania. We are at the Peterson Events Center in one of my favorite cities on planet Earth, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, home of my entire damn family.
Mm-hmm.
We are here for Hey, we are here
lot
for
of
eight.
Wessels.
Oh yeah, a lot of Wessels coming from the Pittsburgh area, and we are here for AEW Dynamite. I thought I was actually going to miss most of the show until I was coming back on the Blue Line from downtown, and a brilliant idea hit me. I could put Hulu on my phone.
There you go.
So I actually got to see 90% of the show. So so let's get right in. But and boy, good thing I realized this because boy, they started off right as rain. The first of the tag team title tournament semifinals, Penta El Cerro Miedo, Rey Fénix against Mark Quinn and Isaiah Cassidy, right?
Mm-hmm. Cassidy, yes.
Cassidy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I want to say Kennedy for some reason. Oh, hey, on that note, one thing that did not make it to Dark, but you saw the whole shtick about Clementine Cassidy, right?
I believe so.
This is the 11-year-old boy who cosplays as Orange Cassidy.
Yes, yes. Uh-huh.
And,
yes.
And he got to, and he it was his birthday, and he got to pin Cody Rhodes.
Yes, I do. I remember hearing of it. I didn't see the footage, though.
Yeah.
But
I read time, about so. It.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so take that, Chris. Cody has done the job.
For once.
Yeah, about that. Anyway, back to the match. Penta and Fénix against Mark Quinn, Isaiah Cassidy. This was stunning.
It was fun.
This was the match I was looking forward to the most. And they led off with it.
Yeah, and I will say this, though. Like, my only minor quips, but is that it did feel like both guys within Private Party were a little bit sloppier than they were in their match against the Bucks. But I feel that's more inexperience and the Lucha Bros kind of working definitely more of your Lucha Pace style, which goes everywhere and anywhere at any given point. And not to mention Fénix probably working with a broken nose right now after what happened a couple of days ago in Mexico.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
We'll get into it later in the show.
We'll get into that. They did look maybe not as on as they did against the Young Bucks, but it was still great. I still love that gin and juice spot. That is possibly one of my favorite spots in wrestling now.
Yeah, the gin and juice portion, and then the reversal of that into the Destroyer near the end as well, I thought was a really nice touch in terms of...
Yeah, I'm just going to put it out there. This was probably the best match of the show. I don't feel comfortable giving stars for this one, though, because I was kind of half distracted by certain things, because I was coming back on a train, so I can't...
You know me. I'm not doing any stars at all, so I'll leave that to you. But still, fun opener for sure. Again, the openers for the most part outside of week one so far have been almost the highlight of every show so far into it, which is a good thing because you've got to start these on the right foot. So.
Oh, yeah. And then we moved on right into the next one with SCU, which is still Kazarian and Scorpio Sky. They're selling this Daniels injury angle, if it's an angle. It probably is.
Yeah, just they're saying between 6 to 8 weeks, which, to be honest, I do think it's an interesting way of both giving CD some time off from the in-ring portions while I guess he works on the AW office side of defense and probably doing like road agent stuff.
And probably doing the Universal Studios Waterworld.
Yeah,
thing,
that is what.
Because let's face it, that probably pays a decent amount of coin.
That's probably part of his insurance on top of it too. But that's a whole different discussion for a different time. Either way, though, I do like it in the fact that it does keep Kazarian and Scorpio as a tag team, and it does keep the SCU trio and the shtick a little bit fresher, so that way they're not doing the exact same catchphrases in the shtick that they've done on BTE.
It's not just the addiction again, you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
But they were up against the team that got a bye into this round. It was the Dark Order.
Mm-hmm.
Stu Bennett and Evil Uno.
Indeed, and wasn't as big of a fan of this one as the initial opener at all.
Yeah, neither couple was things, I.
Yeah, a couple things to take away from it as well as just that a bit more of a slower pace, which I guess even with that, the crowd was still pretty hot for it, so I do think that helped. Weird call on having the Inner Circle guys appear, even though it was during a rest hold spot, still having them appear and kind of distracting the crowd almost in its entirety at that point from the match itself was kind of a weird...
I thought that was kind of shitty, honestly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They could have done that in between the matches, you know?
I do agree. That could have been a commercial break spot really, really easily, so that way as to not take away from the tournament portion. But what's done is done. They did establish the Inner Circle guys as kind of your Statler and Waldorf presence there for a little bit throughout the show, which was interesting in its own right. I'll say that. Popcorn and a little bit of the bubbly.
And air horns. Time. Don't forget about reggaeton air horns.
We'll get into those eventually. The interesting thing for me in that, and I'm not sure if this will get brought up over the next few weeks on TV and whatnot, and I'm not sure if maybe you probably noticed this too, Jeff, is that technically Evil Uno was still the legal man at the end of that match, rather than Stu Grayson. Just...
Oh, I said Stu like Bennett. I said Stu Bennett, didn't I?
Yeah.
Oops.
No, you're fine. He's gone by either it's just Grayson's what he's going by on TV now. But
yeah.
Either way, no, from what I recall, Evil Uno was still the legal man unless there was some sort of tag from Grayson during the spot near the ropes where he walked over the three people's shoulders and did the blockbuster onto Kazarian, I want to say.
I couldn't tell you, to be honest. I didn't pay attention. No. Let's face it, you know, the whole legal man thing, I mean, I think
it's it's been a little weird.
Yeah,
for sure.
Let's face it, ECW kind of killed that dead. You know,
it's just more so the fact that they've been emphasizing it on commentary every so often with the counts and everything else. But if they just decided to go to a whole full fledged Lucha Libre-esque, fuck it. You get in and out of the ring, that's basically your tactical tags right there. I wouldn't mind that, to be honest, because the action end, with a lot of has moves like that. So
yeah, but in the end, your winners, SCU, going over the Dark Order. So two comments about this. Number one, the final will be next week on Dynamite. Number one, Chris, is this cool that they're actually doing it on free TV?
I do find it an interesting call, especially given the two finalists. But at the same time, I do like the fact that they're giving you something to look forward to on TV, at least one major thing every single week.
Right.
So,
and plus,
this being it.
Yeah. Right. And now, plus, now you have an in for, Santana and Ortiz, Proud and Powerful, to challenge somebody for the belts. Mm-hmm. At Full Gear.
At Full Gear or post Full Gear, we'll wait and see on that regard. But I do believe that doing this now, it does allow the opportunity to have the champions crowned, and then the following week, since it'll be the show before Full Gear, I believe, they should be able to possibly establish like a number one contenders type match as well for the pay-per-view in and of itself, just to get him a first defense, the winners of first defense. So,
and then also, given the angling that had been going on, is this kind of the obvious result? Is that it's going to be SCU versus Penta and Phoenix?
Yeah, it was one of those things where after the angle happened next week, I figured this would be a match at Full Gear regardless of what happened in the tournament. But I guess doing this as the finals is just as good. So, yeah, let's let it happen. It should be a fun bout between them next week around.
So, hey, that's next week in Charlottesville, West Virginia, which, by the way, not too far from Pittsburgh. So,
Again, they're just keeping themselves to that East Coast and not accumulating a whole lot of traveling miles on their production trucks and stuff. So.
We're gonna be hitting the South here soon too. So
indeed,
and I don't mean Indiana either. So
sure.
The next match, a rematch.
Yeah, we go to from AW Dark.
From AW Dark,
sanctioned this time around.
Sanctioned. Joey Janela making his TV debut.
Indeed. It's about time.
Against your AAA Mega Campeonato.
Indeed. Mega Campeon Kenny Omega, as it is. And they did do a good job of recapping that specifically during his entrance, which, again, it is that edited version song of the entrance, which sounds and looks a whole lot better now.
I knew you were going to be pleased about that.
No, again, yeah, it's just one of those things that keeping that consistency, especially with TV time being a thing that they've got to be mindful of. I like that Kenny is kind of on board with that and that he's made his entrance, that he's kind of condensed his entrance properly to do that between the music, the notions, and all that. Like, he's not just taking a sweet ass time kind of thing.
Right, but let's also, you know, not bury the lead here, which is because of the TV time limit, they didn't try to do one of Omega's 30-minute New Japan epics either, and I thought the match was actually better for it.
Yes, completely agreed. I do think that the more that Kenny does these type of matches on the style where you've got only your 15, 20-minute matches, like, he's going to be producing, I think, a lot of gold in these Dynamite episodes over the next couple of years due to that. I think it's a really good thing for him to do more of this style and save the 30-minute epics for, you know, your really big, like, blood feud finisher types.
Right.
Not just try to do that every single week kind of thing.
Right. And by the way, from all accounts, yeah, go seek out Kenny Omega versus Rey Fénix from AAA Heroes Inmortales last weekend.
Yes.
Shout out to the Cubs fan.
The event in general, super fun, but that match was much better than their singles match they had last year, which is saying something because they had a banger last year around
two.
Was
that the one in, what was it, NEW?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I never did actually see that, so I can't review that one.
No worries, yeah. But back to this match specifically, it wasn't the obvious, like, unsanctioned blood warfare that they had at Dark the last week around, but still a very fun TV match between them within the confines of the rules. Joey Janela looked like an absolute star, which they needed to do for him with this being his TV debut.
Yeah.
But Kenny is that one higher echelon on the pecking order as of right now, so eventually the damnedest V trigger I've actually ever seen him pull off on anybody, and kudos to Janela for selling it like actual death.
Yeah, that was a very good V trigger, and again, I'm gonna praise the fact that, yeah, because they had he had this constraint, the TV time, you know, he was given a 20-minute match, and holy crap, he actually excelled in it. So it just, again, I understand why he wants to do, you know, these weapons matches. I understand why he wants to do these long, epic matches. I just don't think he's that good at them. I think this is the format that he works best in. And I may die alone on this hill where regards to Kenny Omega, but I think this is where he excels, you know? It's like, you know, like, sometimes an artist will want to do things his way, whether or not he's actually good at it or not. And in the process, he eschews the things that he is actually good at and excels at, you know? And you're just left to wonder, yeah, why did you draw that when, you know? Now, obviously, you know, there are cases where, you know, the opposite is true, too. Because most comic book fans are going to, you know, of a certain type, are going to recognize Dave Mazzucchelli for his work, you know, drawing Frank Miller's, you know, Daredevil Born Again and Batman Year One. However, you know, where Mazzucchelli has really excelled is in, like, his own original graphic novels, like Asterius Polyp, you know, the more artsy stuff. And it's like, yeah, he was really good at these superhero comics, but that's not what he was made to do, you know?
For sure. Yeah, it's interesting to bring up Batman Year One, because I actually did go through that again fairly recently. Just remember kind of like, wow, this was something else.
Yeah, I mean,
because eventually I'm going back into Long Halloween as well, just to reread it for
right. I mean,
longevity sakes.
I mean, Mazzucchelli's art is really good in that, but he's better at his own graphic at a serious polyp and his more artsy graphic novel, because
where
he gets to bend the form, you know,
for sure.
But anyway,
it's one of those things. It's pro wrestling in a nutshell. Sometimes you have guys that fit that certain mold where going to marathons is where they excel at, while others like the shorter, the sweeter. So it just depends kind of on your tastes as well as kind of how you see certain wrestlers too. But I mean, overall, very good match. Happy to see Joey got as much of a spotlight as he did. And Kenny himself is a little bit back on the consistent winning column side of defense, with Moxley coming up at full gear. That sets up that story as, oh, hey, he's finding his mojo again. Woohoo. Cool stuff.
Yeah.
But we do go to commercial here, and then once we're back from commercial, earlier in the show, they did mention that Tony Schiavone would be in the center of the ring to interview Cody. They are ready to do just that. And then, of course,
except the Inner Circle had other ideas.
Like deciding to be football fans with air horns and just all sorts of obnoxious booing. It makes me wonder why not just bring out the Vuvuzelas and make this really annoying on everybody involved.
Oh my God. We may be the only wrestling podcast to ever mention the Vuvuzela.
2010 FIFA World Cup, baby. Never forget.
Oh God. That drove my daughter nuts, actually, when I was watching. I actually had to turn the sound down when I was watching the World Cup that year, because the Vuvuzelas were driving her bonkers.
Oh yeah, that's understandable.
Yeah, but what was supposed to be a Cody Rhodes segment turned into a Jericho promo segment, and you know, let's face it, I am so much glad. It was so much better for it, because let's face it, executive vice president Cody Rhodes cannot cut a fucking promo.
Yeah, I believe the words coward, entitled, millennial little bitch summarize them really well. So go Jericho for that.
But so of course Cody, you know, wanted to make an example of Adams. You know, they went ahead and buried WWE again, which I don't know how much that is really
that
necessary.
That line was dumb. He could have just as easily said, there's no invisible wall. I can step out of this ring and come to you and fight you, and kept it that simple. But no, he had to take shots, and that is just so dumb. Just stop it.
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah.
You know better than this at this point.
I mean, Jericho ad-libbing the one was fine, whatever, you know, because it made the point, you know, but I mean,
and it was interacting with a chant on top of it too from the crowd. So
yeah,
there's a difference in how things were being played out. This just kind of got blurted out of the blue here.
Yeah. But you know, so then, you know, we got to have some, you know, we got to have, you know, an appearance by, you know, Dustin Rhodes. We got to see, you know, MJF, and we got a huge pop for Diamond.
Who wears
Dallas
a
Page.
Scarf?
Yeah.
Who wears a scarf?
Yeah.
And then the DDP pop was great, making it 4-on-4. So they do go upstairs. They stride up to the box seats, but Jericho and company just lock themselves in the little room there in the suite portion itself, which, hey, you know, can't get to the heels. MJF lets his best friend Cody borrow his scarf, in which he wraps around his fist. And he proceeds to break the glass of the door portion on the front there.
Which means if nothing else, Cody Rhodes is a smarter man than Bill Goldberg.
Pretty much. But then again, that's not really, you know, that's not really high praise per se. It's just praise.
Yeah.
It's regular praise. Anyways, the Geese Howard player and his friends decide to fight the Inner Circle right there and then on the spot.
Yeah, I'll cop. It was a fun segment.
Yes, dipping dots. Jericho's face getting dipped in dipping dots.
Dipping dots, the ice cream of the future for the last 20 years. Chris, have you ever had dipping dots?
I have.
Never had dipping dots.
It's basically, if you think about it, it's just basically ice cream broken down into like
little pellets.
Smaller pieces with little pellets, toppings, and stuff like that. It's just.
I have never had Dippin' Dots.
I guess the appeal is that it seems a little more I don't know, like, easier to, like, dig into rather than, like, having to go for actual, like, scoops of ice cream and the like, but it is what it is. It's a good gimmick, I guess. It's lasted 20 years, so.
Well, everybody, thanks for tuning in to Boom Goes the Dippin' Dots here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network.
Oh, it should be noted as well, and this is something we didn't touch on, and I do apologize in advance. After the first match, which was Private Party and, of course, the Lucha Bros, there was a certain segment in which, as our good friends Dave and Lee in Days of Thunder would put it, a large man appears.
I missed this.
Yes, there was a hype package for Wardlow, which they have been hyping up for a little while now at this point, so we figured he'll show up on
I'm sorry, I didn't even hear what you said. Say it again?
There was a hype package for a certain gentleman that they have been hyping up for a little while now. There was a package like that prior to this, I believe. It was All Out that they had it. Wardlow is coming. I have no idea who this is. I do not know who it is either, but he does look like a strong, beefy boy, and the division can use a couple more of those, just as a variety.
Well, I did mention I only saw 90% of this show, so there were some distractions going on today. So
yes, no worries. So that was what happened, and of course there was a hashtag called Wardlow is coming, and I did check that out on Twitterland just to see what sorts of things we would hear about it. Some people were hyped, some people were confused, others are a combination of the two from the looks of it. And then there was one person that went, since Wardlow kind of looks like a muscled up Mitch Trubisky, my inclination as a Bears fan is to boo him loudly, regardless of his alignment, which I thought was comedy gold.
Oh my God. Damn. Woo. Okay. Back to the show. The next match, another tag match. Best Friends against Executive Vice Presidents Matt and Nick Jackson. I think we all know who
your PWG special right there, folks.
And I think we all know who the real star of this match was.
Of course it was Orange Cassidy.
It was Orange Cassidy.
He was super kicking the crap out of those guys to begin with before the bell even rang.
I mean, come on.
Oh, God. What Orange Cassidy, what an absolute freshly squeezed unit.
I just really appreciate that the AEW fans are actually going along with the shtick, and it kind of makes it, you know, they're not no selling the shtick, you know.
Yeah, the shtick could be a very make or break depending on the crowd, and the fact that the crowd buys into it the way that they do, beautiful. I'll say this for this match, fun Young Bucks tag. Trent was absolutely on fire throughout the entirety of it. Like, he showed a lot of energy on this.
And yeah, he was. That was the best Trent Beretta performance I've seen in a while.
Mm-hmm. And Chucky is a really good hot tag on top of it as well, too. So,
at the same time, you've seen one Young Bucks match, you've seen all of them. So, you know, it was what it was. It wasn't bad. It was a good TV tag match. Orange Cassidy was the star focus on this match. So,
and the other star quality performance of this match, Excalibur. Basically, Chucky T hits the Falcon Arrow, and Excalibur, he did the deal. Excalibur with the pop-up line, and then, of course, with going, nobody kicks out of the Falcon Arrow, and then Shivani, but he just did, which was just like,
yeah,
poor Excalibur.
Yeah, that's going to be a theme later on, too. So.
For sure. But more bank for your buck does it, rather than a Meltzer driver, which I thought was really cool that they went back to the well in the old school finisher of theirs to get it done. So
I mean, that is a thing when you have, you know, several finishes, is it that you can, you know, occasionally dip
do variations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Indeed. So
fifth match. Go ahead.
Oh yeah. Before that, Matt Jackson did grab a microphone, and the challenge has been accepted. It will be Proud and Powerful against the Young Bucks at Full Gear.
Okay. Then.
So that is happening.
That's a thing that's happening.
Yeah. Along with that, we eventually did get a video package highlighting Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, because as it turns out, we are in Pittsburgh aka Britsburg, aka her hometown,
oh
aka
yeah,
this next match is a hometown match.
Oh yeah, for her. This is probably the biggest crowd she's ever wrestled in front of, although I can't, you know, really say that for certain. But I'm going to make a guess that this is the biggest crowd she's ever wrestled in front of. She was in. She knew her audience because she was wearing Steelers gear like there was no tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And
between that, having the mascot along with her for the entrance, although it should be highlighted, her opponent is the actual true top gaijin of World Wonder Ring stardom. She is a member of Oedo Tai, spreading the gossip all over the world, just as she should. Jamie Hayter's here, everyone.
Yeah, I'm gonna say that as good as Britt looked with, you know, the Steelers gear, Jamie Hayter was definitely the better wrestler in this match.
It's unfortunate for Britt because it's not that she is like cringy WWE divas bad, but when you put her against a lot of these other girls, like your Jamie Hayters, your Rihos, your B Priestleys, and the like, you can tell the tremendous difference between the two, between the various parties.
Yeah, I mean,
here.
There's a lot to like in Britt Baker. I still remember particularly how myself and my honey became a fan of Britt Baker, and it had nothing.
How
to
so?
Do, it had nothing to do with wrestling. She and Adam Cole were featured.
Oh, right.
Were featured in the Pittsburgh episode of Anthony Bourdain.
Right, you know, I do remember that episode. Yeah,
may he rest in peace. And yeah, and they were eating Polish, you know, they were eating Polish food in Pittsburgh, and it was like, oh, that was also the point at which, at least as people, we came around on Adam Cole. Now I still think he's kind of a mediocre wrestler, mind you, but
you're not the only one.
But you know, it was like, so yeah, that was when we first kind of got into Britt Baker, was because of Anthony Bourdain. So
yeah, I think it is the exact same situation that you described with Cole. I think applies to Britt, where wrestling wise, it's kind of, your mileage may vary depending on what you're looking for, but like, she seems to be a really good person outside of the ring, which matters more often than you'd think in this time and age.
Yeah,
especially considering pro wrestling. So.
Well, I mean, I told the Zack Sabre Jr. story before. So,
yes,
yeah, so.
Indeed. You can go to our podcast, which is called Strong Style Story, our main podcast in which we talk New Japan Pro Wrestling a couple of episodes back for that particular story. I apologize for not recalling the exact episode that
it was
in.
It was whichever one it was that when we recapped our New York adventure.
Mania Weekend.
Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. So. I will say this. Hayter looked really good, and I'm not sure if the spot made it on TV or not, I guess, depending on commercial breaks and which feed people were watching, but that little wet willy spot that Jamie Hayter pulled off on Britt Baker was
I did
hilarious.
See that. Yes,
I,
that was good.
I just spreading the gossip of Oedo Tai worldwide.
Again,
bless her heart.
Again, I mean, it's nothing. It's not that Britt Baker was bad. It's just that Jamie Hayter was just better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but eventually it is a circumstance where a stunner into a fisherman's neckbreaker combo sets up a basement super kick and into the lockjaw, which does give Britt Baker the victory in her hometown, and a good little moment for her to have with that crowd in Pittsburgh that definitely was 100%.
I will 100% say this, behind her. It's still a weird submission finisher, but I like it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it plays into it's the one thing that plays into the Deno gimmick, but if there is one thing that we should point out is that, guys, we get it on commentary. She's a dentist. This is literally becoming a Deno plan. Britt's a dentist. Deno plan. Britt's a dentist. Yeah. Deno plan situation.
Yeah, you know, we've been knowing that shit again since the Bourdain episode. She showed her in dental school.
Again, special credit to John Pangle for specifically coming up with that shtick and posting it on Twitter.com. You can check his podcast out of Tornado Tag Radio and the Night of the Living Geeks podcasting network. Plugs, everybody. Plugs.
Chris.
Yes.
The main event of this episode of AEW Dynamite. Billy the Fish.
Indeed.
Versus John freaking Moxley.
Okay, one final thing before we get to that level of hype is that there was an interview with Jamie Hayter that was supposed to happen before Brandi Rhodes, apparently still holding a grudge with the fact that Kagetsu recruited her into Ototai for 3 days, then realized that this wasn't going to work out and kicked her out of it. Apparently just shoving Jamie Hayter aside and really getting all super mega ticked off about it, which I guess we'll hear about it at some point next
Well, if
week
they
with
want
the Omega
to, well, if they
Single.
want to incur the wrath of the likes of Kagetsu and Hazuki, that's on her.
Yeah, that's pretty much the gist of it at this point.
With the full wrath of Bushiroad behind them.
Exactly. They've got Bushiroad money now, boys. You better watch out.
Yeah. Anyway, can I go back to gushing now?
Yes, of course.
Okay,
Please.
John freaking Moxley, and of course it goes right in with a chair attack by Pac. So good to know he's spreading that love around.
And again, Pittsburgh, just to show how good they've been all night and as a crowd, starting up the bastard chants immediately after that, wonderful.
Pittsburgh is
Well
one of the
played.
best wrestling crowds I was ever in when I was at that ROH New Japan show at in 2017. The first time that Suzuki had joined a tour like that. I mean, he'd done one-off shows, but he hadn't done like a full tour. And yeah, that Pittsburgh crowd was like one of the best crowds I was ever in. In stark contrast to the next night, which was Columbus, Ohio, which I will never set foot in that fucking city ever again because that crowd was fucking awful. But
Indeed.
regardless, yeah, Pittsburgh is a great wrestling city. It has to because, of course, everybody always brings up Bruno Sammartino. I'm just gonna bring up my distant relative. One Mr. John L. Sullivan, the late John L. Sullivan, aka Luscious Johnny V. Johnny Valiant.
Indeed.
Very,
Yeah, I
very,
mean,
very distant relative of mine. I'm not going to claim anything beyond that because I don't even think I ever met him.
But I
So.
mean, even then, still Pittsburgh in general, good wrestling town, and
Dominic
they showed it
DiNucci.
throughout the entire night. And I mean, with this match, no different either. They were in for Pac doing his bastardly Pac things, and for Jon Moxley firing back at him anytime there was a chance. That headlock driver on the apron, Pac sold it like he died,
Oh,
which was
yes.
whole
But can we also
serving
talk something
for.
else about this match,
Of course.
Chris? Because for all the talk about how, the old school is dead and only NWA Power is bringing the old school back, which I hate that we keep bringing that show up, although this past week's episode was actually a return to form. I really enjoyed this week's episode. This match was TV time limit. When was the last time you heard TV time limit remaining since the days of Mid-South?
I mean, yeah, they've been doing it pretty much for every AEW main event, but this was the first time we really got a taste of exactly what that means. And we'll get into that momentarily because there was definitely a lot of highlights. But Pac dominating for a little while there, obviously, Jon Moxley's headlock driver onto the apron really setting things up for an eventual break. Really, some crazy stuff. The Boss Man Slam coming up as a close two count for Moxley. The knee tremblers. Punk with an Avalanche Falcon Arrow that somehow didn't get it done to
Yeah,
Excalibur's shock and awe.
so basically, this episode basically killed Falcon Arrow dead. So Eiji Iizaki it weeps from the grave.
Rip. In general, rest in peace, but RIP in this
Yes, of
particular
course. Yeah,
circumstance of
in
the
general,
move.
yes, of course. Rest in peace, Eiji Iizaki, aka Hayabusa, if you were not aware. But yeah, but then it actually went to the TV time limit even after Pac kicks out of what looked like a deadly finish. And Pac
It
kicks out.
basically. Yeah,
And
it was the situation of where, Paradise Shift did get hit, but Moxley, being kind of slow on the cover, eventually rolls Pac on his back, gets the pinfall, 2 3/4 count. 2 seconds after, it's declared over due to TV time limit. Crowd is understandably annoyed by this, which, hey, it is what it is, but nobody's as furious as John Moxley is about this.
As he hits another Death Rider, this time on the ref.
Indeed, and then paces and mutters, "Time limit my ass," to the cameras at least 3 times before we fade into black, which... a finish to the episode.
Yeah, but you know what the irony here is? Is that the time limit draw, of course, was the best course of action for a TV episode because both guys get to keep their heat. The program continues. Everybody looks strong.
Yeah.
And now it keeps this 3-way program between John Moxley, Billy the Fish, and Kenny Omega fully alive.
Yeah,
so actually,
completely agree.
The time limit draw, that is some good storytelling.
Yeah, it was a good call.
I understand why the live crowd may have been pissed. I mean, I was hoping Moxley would go over, to be honest, because, you know, I'm just going to gush about John Moxley, but storyline-wise, that made the most sense. And
yes.
And that's where I'm sticking.
Yep, agreed. And with that does cover this episode of AEW Dynamite. Pros and cons, Jeff. We should start.
Pros and cons. Mox versus Pac. I thought it was a fine match. Best match of the night, of course. Pentagon and Phoenix against Private Party. The rest had a lot to live up to. Pros. Keeping Kenny Omega restrained to a 20-minute match. And Orange Cassidy.
Yeah.
And Britt Baker repping the Steelers.
Yeah, I think for those pros, I'm going to definitely say the main event for sure takes it. Excalibur on commentary. Jamie Hayter having a big-time performance on their first really primetime televised match and looking really good in the process of it. Huge fan of that. Private Party, Lucha Bros match, being a really fun opener, was big. Jericho mocking MJF scarf, big highlight.
Jericho in general, big highlight.
Yeah, Jericho in general, big highlight. A little bit of the bubble every time.
Showing the tickets as if it was a shield.
Indeed.
Oh, buddy. Yeah, you know what? Cons, I guess, you know, if we had to list a con... The biggest con of the episode was SCU and Dark Order. That was like the flattest match of the evening. In comparison.
Mm-hmm. I do agree.
So
between that and Cody taking unnecessary pawn shots that he shouldn't be taking at this point and that he should know better, but alas, sometimes you get hoisted by your own petard or something like that. Yeah. But either way, yeah, I think that covers pros and cons pretty well.
Yeah, so you know, look what we have to look forward to next week. We have the tag team tournament final, which tag team champions are going to be crowned. It's going to be either Scorpio Sky and Frankie Kazarian, or it's going to be Penta and Phoenix. I know who I want to see. We'll see where this goes.
Indeed,
and whether or not Proud and Powerful. Oh, you know what? Here I am talking about Proud and Powerful challenging for the tag belts. I completely forgot about that Young Bucks match. So you know what? Forget everything I said about.
No worries, you're good. It should be noted, though, we are going to be talking AEW Dark episode 4 first thing next week around when we do come back. And on the matches for that, just for a little bit of the hype here, Dustin Rhodes and Sonny Kiss are teaming up against QT Marshall and Peter Avalon, which we do know about.
Sonny Kiss is back. Aces.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then along with that, Ami Sakura, Allie, Penelope Ford, and Sadie Gibbs, Fatal 4-Way match. That's happening on Dark.
Ooh.
And then the main event is apparently going to be Darby Allin, Jimmy Havoc, and Jack Evans in a triple threat.
I hate triple threats, though.
Yeah.
It's
Darby, so
Darby
I'm curious.
Allin,
I'm going to check it out.
Thank God. Yeah, we better not get... The flat Jimmy Havoc that we got on that TV match with Darby Allin, because I don't know if I could take that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I guess we'll see,
completely
though.
Completely agreed.
Yeah. But hey, Sonny Kiss, you know, hey, Sonny Kiss, Emi Sakura, sign me up.
Yeah.
We'll definitely talk about that next week. So, oh my God, it has been nearly a month of All Elite Wrestling on TV.
Indeed. And again, guys, thank you so much for joining us again for the fourth episode of the shindig that we decided to throw up because nobody decided to stop us. And I guess we're on the roll at this point that we might as well keep this going for as long as we can. So,
Chris, any plugs?
Wise, yeah, perfect timing on that. Just the usual for me through Twitter land and Instagram. You can find me at Brazilian Fury. That's Brazilian with an S instead of a Z. Nothing too crazy happening outside of, obviously, these episodes and then doing Strong Style Story every so often.
Of course, you can find me on Twitter at Strong Style Story without the E in style. My personal Twitter, GD Wessel. It's two S's, one L. If you like soccer, listen to my other podcast, Busting Balls, at soundcloud.com/busting-balls. Other than that, yeah, thanks for joining us. Have another good week. Chris, any final words?
Boom goes the dynamite.
We'll see you next week.